And it hits me, oh my gosh, this is that triangle.
You know, there's explanation for everything that occurred in the Rendlesham Forest incident that doesn't involve aliens at all.
It was completely silent. It comes right over our heads.
He saw a classic flying saucer, really, standing in a clearing.
He turned over to my father and held his hand, and he looked in his eyes and he said, "We're not alone."
Welcome to Podcast UFO for our live show. We're live every Wednesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the Dark Matter Radio Network. Please remember to visit the website podcastufo.com for past episodes, blogs, and forums. During the show, feel free to participate live in our chat room. And don't forget to like us on our very active Facebook page.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the show. Well, things got a little discombobulated with this show in particular, as Story Musgrave is coming on as our guest, but he has a very short window that he can be with us. So what we're going to have to do is we're going to have to talk with him first, and then I will put the news in, which was pre-recorded with Alejandro Rojas. Somewhere in the middle of the show, we'll be bringing in Peter Slattery from Australia right after Story Musgrave. So it'll go like this. First of all, we will have Story Musgrave, the space shuttle astronaut, will be on. The news will be on after that. And then after that, we'll have Peter Slattery, and he'll be on for hour one, the rest of the hour one, and hour two. Thanks a lot. And right here is Story Musgrave. Story, you're out in California?
I'm in Burbank. I'm at work right now in Burbank, California.
Well, you know, I was reading your bio, and you have a lot of things going on. You want to talk a little bit about your, I mean, you're retired, but you're not retired. You're busy as heck.
No. Well, I never retired. No, that's not a word I use yet.
Retired as an astronaut, maybe?
No, I didn't. Okay. I left, so.
Oh, okay.
Today I'm a professor of design at Art Center College for Design. I'm working right now at a company called Applied Minds. So we're innovators, rapid prototypers, and invent the future for other companies. Got a production company in Sydney, a landscaping company in Orlando. I got an 8-year-old daughter.
Wow.
She's the light of my life. Of course, my oldest child is 55. I need to say so far, Martin.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. Hey, so you are one of the reasons you're on the show is you're coming up at Contact in the Desert later on. So
yes,
what is your topic actually going to be at that seminar?
Yeah, I don't think, of course, I'm on some panels, and I don't think the most important thing, and I've done lots of earlier ones like MUFON and others, I think the most important thing I can do is talk about my visual observations. I'll talk about, I've had the privilege of being in airplanes for 18,000 hours and six space flights, and the privilege of the opportunities to see things and to interpret things and to develop skills for being an observer, both what's there and what could be there, and what it's going to look like, and what different objects might look like. So I'm going to talk about that. So I have, like, for example, I have a massive experience, maybe anyone in history, of deploying satellites and see how, when they disappear, you know, over the horizon, so to speak, what do they look like? So how do you see other flying spacecraft, of which a satellite is one? I've had huge experience in recovering satellites, of approaching a satellite, you know. In mission control, I had 25 missions in mission control, so I love those folks. I know how curious I am about things. And so they always point objects out that are going by. And they're very, very good about that. In other words, we never let another satellite come within 30 miles of us. That's sort of the resolution of the radar. But they will always point things out to me when they're going by. And they'll tell me in a very precise way. You know, it's looking out the back window, it's 20 degrees left the tail and 30 degrees above the tail. Then I can spot that thing. And so I'll be able to spot that thing, and I'll see it fly on by. And so it's things like that, you know. And then I'll Challenger's first flight. When you are manufacturing a huge spacecraft like that, there's times that nuts, bolts, washers, and even tools fall behind panels and fall behind walls, and you've got no way to get them out. They just sit there, and that's where they are. But the shake, rattle, and roll of a launch just rattles them loose, you see. And the engine shut down, and then you pop right into, you lurch right into zero-G. Zero-G, everything will get out of the cavity it's in. I'll give you an example. You've got a gallon milk container. And you put a tiny screw in it. Well, on orbit, you can watch that screw bounce all over, and eventually it's going to bounce where the hole is. Even though the hole's not that big, it will get out of its closet. So you can't contain anything. If the hole out of the container, you know, is big enough to allow the object, it's going to come out. So I got Challenger's first flight. And so Challenger went through all the manufacture. When I opened the payload bay doors, it's like Home Depot coming out. I got wrenches. It's not just nuts and bolts. I got wrenches. So I got the whole stuff coming out. Okay. Well, it comes out now, and so you can study. You can study those objects as they move away from you. You can study things like the orbital mechanics. You can study things like, if no other object touches that object, it's going to move straight away from you. And you learn to look at its velocity, you see. You see its curved velocity, you know it came from you. Because if you extrapolate that, its current velocity, because you know Newton's second, it's going to maintain that exact direction until touched by something else. Mm-hmm. And so you can see you left it. But anyway, and it's deploying satellites and looking at the debris that they leave. And so it's that totality of things, and it's looking at things in other orbits and seeing how they have to behave if you're in a different orbit. And I'm talking only about a few hundred feet. If you got something a few hundred feet away, it's not got the same orbital mechanics you got, and it's not going to stay with you. It can't stay with you.
Wow.
Unless it's in a totally active, unless it's continuously firing its rocket. That's just orbital mechanics. So anyway, Martin, you know, what I got to offer them is really the night scene. But what I got to offer them is the only time you're going to see anything is at night. You know, I have tried forever to see things in the day. You can't see things in the day. When you really see stuff is when you are in the dark and the object you're looking for is in the sun. And it is a bright star out there.
Oh.
And I've spent days and days tracking two satellites. My last mission, we put out two satellites in 16 days. So they were just sitting out there with us in the same orbit. Anyway, it's stuff like that. It's to give people, because I've had the privilege of a huge amount of airplane flight at altitude, that's 40,000 above, and I've had a huge number of, you know, experience in space flight. Is what do things look like? How do they behave? What have you seen? What does it mean? How do you interpret it? And how are you going to see other stuff? Other stuff that hasn't come yet, maybe. Okay, so I think that's the main thing. My experience of being in those places and how you get to be a great observer. How do you think about it ahead of time? How do you research it? You know, so that it's a privilege to be there. And doggone it, you're representing humanity, and you got to be the best observer possible. So I think that's what I'm going to give them.
Well, I consider that any astronaut would have to be a very good observer. And I'm wondering
They don't work on it. No, they don't work on it, Martin.
No.
And they don't turn all the lights off either. They don't. A lot of them don't turn all the lights off to see the stars and the planets and everything else. And so, no, there's a huge range. Astronauts got the huge range, the same as other people. Some do, most, in fact, I don't know of anyone else, they made a science of what you can see. You got to do your homework. You have to do your homework between flights. That's all. Mm-hmm. You have to work on that. It doesn't just come. You don't just jump up there and get in the window and see stuff. No, it don't work that way.
I had a conversation with Alan Bean, maybe 3 or 4 years ago.
Yes.
Actually, I did a show with him. I also have another podcast on art and antiques, and I did a show with him on his artwork. And
yes.
But basically, I asked him, I said, you know, what do you say to these people that say that no one ever really landed on the moon? And he kind of chuckled, and he said, you know, you can't convince those people any different, so he doesn't even bother trying. You know, but he knows he was there. And
it is a belief system, sort of, But, you know, you have to be sort of an evidence-based person. It's not fair not to look at the evidence and just say we didn't. A powerful telescope can see our spacecraft there.
You can see
the landing part of the spacecraft that we left there. An even more powerful telescope is going to be able to see the backpacks and the suits we left there. And a laser reflector, you want to fire a laser at the moon, it'll come back at you. And a $500 direction finder radio, it can point at the radio signals coming from the moon when we're talking there. That's $500. It'll point at the moon. That's where that signal came from.
Uh-huh.
And the Russians are not going to let us say we went there when we didn't. Anyway, there's a lot of evidence-based stuff that we were there.
Right, right. Now
it's hard to fake. It's hard to fake 1/5 G, too, and it's hard to fake that golf ball that went forever.
I can't even imagine what it was like to be out in space. I mean, and to look down, how accurate, did you see the movie Gravity? I'm going to ask you, first of all, and I just wonder what you thought the first part of that accuracy was.
Well, I don't expect a movie to be accurate. It's a drama. It's a film. So you don't expect it to be accurate. It wasn't, but then I think it had a problem with being a great film. So I'm a film kind of person. I wasn't crazy about Gravity as a film, but I don't go in and judge a film based on its reality. Because, you know, that's not what a film is. A film is supposed to be a great story.
Right.
But I was a little disappointed in the story. It blows everything up. The theme is we're going to keep blowing it up and see if we survive. That's not enough theme. We keep blowing it up and see if we survive. But there's a whole bunch, of course, that's totally inaccurate. You're not going to survive those kind of hits.
Right.
But anyway, it's not supposed to be accurate. It's a film.
Okay.
If a film wants to be, it can be.
All right. And now I'm going to ask you, I haven't really been able to find, I mean, I saw a couple things online on some forums, but what is your thoughts about UFOs in general?
Well, there's two sides to that, and that is that there's trillions of life forms out there. There's trillions of planets that have life. And so the universe is so massively big, it is big beyond the imagination. Wherever you shine Hubble, wherever you look at Hubble, even in dark sky, it's another 1,000 galaxies. They got 100 billion stars in each galaxy. My goodness, you're talking about every single picture Hubble takes got 5 trillion stars. And the place is absolutely huge. And a whole bunch of those planets conducive to life, and the carbon, we're carbon life. We're the way carbon hooks to a cell. That's what makes life. But we're still finding species. We probably got 6 million species on this earth alone. Now that is power.
Mm-hmm.
And so whether life evolved here, we think it started from all the commonalities between all the living forms. Life started here about 4 billion years ago. It could have come from somewhere else, you know. We don't have that answer. It could have ridden in on a meteorite or something like that. It could have ridden in, or it formed in a soup, but we don't know that. But my goodness, the power of life to arise and the power of life to travel, even on, meteorites and that kind of stuff. So life is unbelievably powerful, and there's trillions of planets that could support life. So I think out there, life is everywhere out there. In fact, I think there's billions that are doing star travel. If a planet gets its stuff together, now, so on this planet here, we've been doing technology for however long, 300 years only. If a planet got its life together, it could be doing technology for millions of years, and so it could achieve star travel. So I think in the whole, our universe is, heck, there's hundreds of millions of planets. It also doing star travel. Okay, that's that side. On the other side, for me, and this is very important, for me, I have no evidence, and that's my personal evidence. I have no personal observation or evidence brought to me that says we have been visited here. But now, Martin, I don't say we have not.
Uh-huh.
That's different. I've spoken to people who have been abducted. That's fine. And I did not tell them they were not abducted. I was not happy with the amount of with evidence they brought to me. I was not happy with the number of details they gave me in the observations. That doesn't matter. I don't tell them they were not, because I was not there. And I do not say we have not been visited, because I have not been there to make all the observations other people have. All I say that is story Musgrave, the observations that I have made and the evidence brought to me, I do not have evidence satisfactory to me to say we have been visited. So it's two things. It's everywhere out there, billions and trillions, and people doing star travel. But for me, the little story Musgrave and the narrow experiences that I've had, I don't have any evidence we've been visited here. Not to say it hasn't happened.
Do you mind? I'm going to play a quick clip. I had a UFO debate with Dr. Seth Shostak from the SETI, and he mentions your name, and I'd like to play this quick clip, and then I'd like to have your opinion after it. It's less than a minute, so I'm going to play it right now.
Okay.
So you wouldn't consider witnesses, so many witnesses, say, for instance, astronaut Gordon Cooper and former Governor Fife Symington and people like that, what would you say about them being as observers?
Oh, well, I don't think that they're professional observers. I mean, it's not that I'm impugning their integrity. I've talked with a lot of the astronauts, Edgar Mitchell and Gene Cernan and all these guys, you know, and if you talk to them about these things, to begin with, usually it's secondhand. They haven't actually seen these things themselves. They heard somebody else talk about it. But even if they have seen them themselves, you know, Story Musgraves thought he heard the aliens and the muffin fans in the space shuttle. Okay, I don't think he's lying. I don't think he's making something up. But I don't consider that very good evidence. And in fact, anybody who's in forensics will tell you that witness testimony is about the poorest kind of evidence there is, particularly in science.
So I just ran that clip. And what do you have to say to his comment?
Well, I don't know where he's getting it from. I certainly didn't hear any aliens in the fans. So I don't know where that's coming from. What I did comment on is the fans, the particular fans, cause a reverberation in the hearing system in me, and they kind of kick off some music. In other words, for me, the fans have got a rhythm and a beat to them, which represents music. And so it stimulates in me kind of a musical sensation, not just the pure hum of a fan. That's all.
So somehow he interpreted that. It's not a very scientific thing for him to do.
Well, no, that was Seth. No, I love Seth, and we have a great time together. But he may have read what somebody else. So when you make comments and they get passed on tribally from one person to another, and the story can change.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. But so it's very interesting and it's very beautiful, you know, what happens when the fans start reverberating and they create this rhythmic kind of music in your ear. It's related. It's like music, and it's beautiful.
Wow. I mean, just the thing I always think about, how wonderful it must be to be out in space and looking down at the Earth. I mean, That is just beyond words, isn't it? It must be.
No, I can express that.
Okay.
It's not beyond words, but it's gorgeous. But, I mean, it's beautiful in all kinds of different ways. All kinds of different ways.
Hmm.
And so the aurora is it's so beautiful you can't stand it. Now, I love night passes. I just adore night passes. And so they're incredibly rich. You don't always get them. You need to get a consensus from everyone. You turn the lights off and get dark adapted. But so the stars kind of intermingle with the streetlights, you know. And the aurora is just so beautiful, it's beyond the imagination. You barely can stand that. And the noctilucent clouds, which go to 30, 40 miles high in their color, I saw two sprites, and I defined sprites even before they were accepted as a phenomenon. Mine were green. That's vertical lightning coming up 30, 40 miles. And the moon racing across the ocean, the moon racing down the rivers. And so the moon going down the rivers, of course, at 18,000 miles an hour, that's your speed. And the only part of the river that's lit is where the reflection of the moon. you can actually see, you can see things with starlight. You don't even need a moon. You can see partially. You can see land masses with starlight.
Wow.
So the whole scene is, and of course, many more stars than you see down here. And the whole celestial sphere is different. The North Star does not remain in the north. It, you know, it depends on your orbit. It cones around because this is your orbit, and now it brings the stars up and down. It's not the Earth's orbit. It's not the Earth's spin that brings stars up and down. You do 16 times faster than the Earth.
Mm-hmm.
So, but anyway, the celestial sphere is fun, too. So night pass is spectacular.
Oh, I bet.
Lightning, too. Horizontal lightning goes for 100 miles. Yeah.
Well, I've seen just lightning from an airplane, you know, from a jet,
yes.
30,000 feet, and it's pretty spectacular.
Yes. Well, yeah.
You can just left, so whenever you're ready.
Whenever I'm ready. Okay. Thanks.
One of the
we'll take another 5 or 10 minutes here.
Okay. One of the things I always think about is when you're up there, do you, like, have in the back of your mind, am I going to get back safely? I mean, is that always, like, nagging at you?
It is not. And, of course, you know, I did not fly after Columbia. We thought launch was the really hazardous part of a mission if you got through that. There's no signs of impending disaster up there, so you're very comfortable.
Really?
So it's not the sign. Well, there's no signs of impending disaster other than the fans. It's very quiet, and zero G is very smooth, and it's very serene because you're floating around. And no, you don't worry about that. And I never worried during a spacewalk either. Maybe I should have, but that was totally peaceful.
Oh, I bet. We had an astrophysicist, Dr. Jeffrey Bennett, on here, and he was a senior, he was a visiting scientist with NASA, and he said that between him and his colleagues, they all sort of agreed that if a intelligence can get through a bottleneck of technology without blowing themselves up, that they'd be traveling the stars. Is that kind of your philosophy as well?
You're going to have to interpret that for me.
Okay.
I missed the point.
All right.
Maybe
all right.
I'm having a slow day here.
All right, I know. Let's just say humankind. You know, we have this bottleneck socially to get through this bottleneck of technology that without blowing ourselves up. And he was, you know, of course, we can't really predict what other social aspects of other intelligence are out there. But if they do, whoever it is, get through technology without blowing themselves up, they probably are traveling the stars. And you mentioned you thought that there were probably a lot of interstellar travelers out there.
I think there are. Of course, we need a big breakthrough. We need a technical breakthrough, so we're not chemical rocket engines at the current speeds. We need a breakthrough there. But
right.
Another serious question, would we be visited? We would not. It's 50 wars this week. The world is getting worse right now. It's coming apart in terms of what the species is doing to itself. Now, it is 50 wars this week. And so if you're a visiting creature, you're not coming here. You're not coming here because the advanced evolutionary strain can't get along with itself.
Right.
If we can't get along with our own species, how are we going to welcome them, you see? Another thing, you look at the Earth as a tiny little speck out there, like Cassini trying to take a picture of Saturn. It got a picture of this little speck, Earth, and Voyager, of course, took a picture of Earth from 1 billion miles. You got 30,000 nuclear bombs sitting on that little speck. Now, that is not smart, and that is not a good thing to do. And someone that looks in on us and sees that, they say, well, why would they do that? What is that about? And we're not going there.
Yeah.
So the look from far out can be a, you know, it can be a kind of a calibration on who we are.
Right. I think there's a Stanton Friedman kind of says the same thing. You know, we're in tribal warfare. Why the heck would they want to come here and show themselves if they are, you know? And
yeah.
If they're watching what's going on, you're right. But, you know, it's funny. You hear there's a lot of UFO sightings, whether they're extraterrestrial or not, but you hear a lot of sightings during wartime and war situations, battle scenes, and things like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. okay, I know you have to leave fairly soon, and that's fine. We can make do on this end here. But what do you say about other astronauts that talk about UFOs, that, like Gordon Cooper? I'm sure you probably knew him. What do you think about his comments on the UFOs that
he
saw?
I knew him very well. He never brought me evidence that I could accept as a intelligent being or a visiting spacecraft from somewhere else.
Uh-huh.
Gordon never brought me that evidence that I could accept.
That's the hardest part about this whole thing is the evidence. Of course, I mean it's
but, and of course you need to this. Gordon's one. This 600 people have been in space or more, and he's the only one.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you have to look at the bell-shaped curve. You look at the sample of things. You have one person that thinks they saw something, and you have 600 people that didn't. Now, again, I am not saying they have not been here. That's not what I'm saying. I just say I look at the evidence, that's all. And so nobody's brought me evidence that I can accept conclusively.
Yeah.
I'm not saying they haven't been here.
Uh-huh. We have a message board, and there's a question up there, and I haven't been able to pay too much attention to that tonight. But what do you think of the Institute for Noetic Sciences, Edgar Mitchell?
Yeah. Well, you know, that's what he does.
Okay. Is that your...
Well,
yeah.
Well, no, I don't. The Noetic Sciences, that's one thing. But Ed is someone who supports conspiracy theory. Ed is someone that makes public statements about a conspiracy to cover up evidence, that the government covers up evidence about visitations from out there. Well, I can only say that I totally disagree with that conclusion. I have been on two Department of Defense missions. I'm a Marine. I'm Air Force. I'm 30 years with NASA. I was on two Department of Defense missions, as deep in the government as you can possibly go. And I am always open. I'm totally honest. I'm from the heart. And I never found any evidence for any kind of cover-up. There's too many good people in there that when something is important for the public to know, when something's important for Mother Earth to be aware of something that's going on, those people are going to come forward. And believe me, I'm going to come forward. Believe me, I'm not going to let anyone cover up stuff. It's important to the species.
Now,
but again, I have no evidence, but maybe Ed's got evidence I don't have. But again, he couldn't bring me any evidence.
Again,
it's kind of personal. It's Story Musgrave has been looking for conspiracy. Story Musgrave been looking for the cover-up, and I cannot find it. NASA is massively, totally open. That was their charter, and doggone if they're not. And no one in the government or NASA has ever put the slightest muzzle, the slightest thing on me, not to totally express myself and talk about whatever.
That's good to hear. Do you think it's possible, though, that it could be so compartmentalized that a person like you couldn't even find out if there was some type of cover-up, even if it was from, say, decades ago?
Hypothetically, that's a possibility.
Mm-hmm. But you were deep into things.
Very deep. Mm-hmm. Very, very deep. I had two Department of Defense missions, classified missions, unknown clients. And so I'm just saying I had classified missions with the Marines. I was the Air Force, 30 years with NASA. I'm just saying I couldn't find a conspiracy.
Uh-huh.
I couldn't find it, and I was totally open, even though I am on the edge. Everyone knows I'm on the edge. I was accepted as being on the edge.
Oh, that's good. That's good to know. Another question up on the message board. It says that you weren't happy with the amount of details abductees provided to you. Can you elaborate a little bit on that?
Well, it's a matter of if you simply go and explore one of the national parks, and so you haven't been to Bryce Canyon, you haven't been to the Badlands or Sequoia, A person who has been to the national parks will come back with unbelievable details. It's every pine cone. It's every piece of sand. It's the temperature. It's the dryness. It's how it felt. And so you go into, you know, some unusual environment or scenario, the people who have been there come back with, they're just a flowing. It's just coming out of them like water. It is a totally flowing description of what their experiences were, what they saw, heard, felt. I have not gotten that kind. But they also, they may say, you know, they were brainwashed so they couldn't reveal what happened to them. Well, that's something else.
Interesting.
But it's how much the description. Well, let's go a couple more minutes.
Okay. What type of evidence would you say would be good evidence for UFOs? I mean, video is not. And what do you think of video evidence?
Sure, it's okay. Any form of evidence, yeah. It's just, you know, any form of evidence. Where there's some verification, where there's some objectivity. Video is fine. Anything's fine. If there's some objectivity that's beyond the observer. So an observer can take the pictures, can take the video, can take the sound, and can take their experiences and bring something objective, which is outside of themselves, to somebody else.
I see. And so with that being said, you say that you have not seen enough evidence. Or do you mean as far as anybody in this world has not seen enough evidence, or do you just mean yourself personally?
Myself and what was brought to me by others. So this is a personal thing. I'm not saying they haven't been out there. I'm not saying that. I'm only saying the evidence that came to me was not satisfactory for me to make that conclusion.
I see. Okay. And now I'm just going to talk to you a little bit about, if we got just another minute here.
Yeah.
How do you think the odds are of actually finding life on Mars are?
Certainly a whole bunch of, yeah?
I meant to say signs of former life on Mars is what I meant to say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure. Oh, there could be life there too. Well, we know there were bunches and bunches of canyons of water there. And so where did it go? So there was a huge change of state. From visible flow, you know, from flowing water to its current dry state. So it went through some big, I'll just be a few seconds here, Don. Yeah. So Mars is a very friendly place in terms of terraforming it, introducing life to it. I think that's very possible, too. It's very powerful in terms of the possibility of life. So I think most scientists think it had a big change of state. Yeah. You know, a big change of state from back then to what it is today. So,
and it could have been
the
magnetosphere, probably, or that could have been part of it.
I guess so, yeah. And, of course, life helps to make an atmosphere. There's very little atmosphere there, but life helps to make an atmosphere. I think Mars is a very living place. Even if there's not life there now, it could support, if we terraformed it, which it's got to be ethical. You can't terraform something if there's another life already there. You have to respect the other culture. Well, I think I better run then.
Okay. All right. Well, it's been great. Thank you so much.
Okay, Martin.
I've really enjoyed it a lot.
Thanks a lot. I hope. Thanks for bringing me to your listeners.
You bet. Okay. Very good.
Okay. All right.
I'll talk to you later.
Good night, Martin.
Good night. So that's it for this guest, and what's going to happen now is, because we had to do things a little different, I'm going to go ahead and play the news. Now, it's going to sound a little funny because I think, well, the news is definitely pre-recorded, but I think in that I say something about Story Musgrave coming up at the end. So just ignore that. Who is coming up after the music break instead of Story Musgrave is Australia's Peter Slattery, and he is coming up right after this, and right now I'm going to play the news.
And it hits me, oh my gosh, this is that triangle.
You know, there's explanation for everything that occurred in the Rendlesham Forest incident that doesn't involve...
You know what? That's pretty funny. That was the wrong one. Here is the news that I... bear with me, live people. Here we go. And I can't really think of much more to say than introduce you. Alejandro, how are you?
I am muy bueno. That is Spanish for very good.
Thank you for the Spanish lesson, man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, no problem.
You know Story, right? You've met him before?
I have met Story Musgrave, and it was a lot of fun because he's a really interesting guy. He spoke at a MUFON a few years ago in California. I'm a huge fan of NASA. I know conspiracy people like to hate on him. I really like, you know, space and space exploration, so I find him terribly fascinating.
Yeah, interesting guy. And there's something Seth Shostak said to me a while back I'm going to ask him. So what do we have going on for the news this week?
Yeah, lots of cool stuff. So Dan Aykroyd, about a week or so, was on the Huffington Post show. They call it the Huff Post show. And some of you may be aware that there's this thing called Huff Post Live where 24/7 they're streaming news. And they have this studio. I've been there a few times to visit my buddy Lee Spiegel, and you can see I've been on the show, actually. And it's really cool. But now, instead of just these kind of live news pieces, kind of CNN-ish, but it's also, you know, very casual, more casual, more millennial, hipster kind of style news. But now they have a show that they do, and it was only their third episode. It airs every Friday, and they had Dan Aykroyd on it. And the host said, hey, you know, I told myself I'd do this if I ever got to talk to you. You believe in UFOs, right? And Dan Aykroyd kind of paused for a sec. There were some chuckles coming from the crowd, or I think it's just some people who were hanging out there. And so he kind of paused, and then he went right into it. Because Dan Aykroyd's way into UFOs, and he loves talking about it. So he starts talking about it. He starts talking about how the Air Force knows about this. There's a conspiracy. But essentially saying that, you know, the Air Force, even though they're not telling us, they know how can they tell us that there's aliens here or that, you know, they don't know what's going on. And he's like, I don't think they know much more than anybody really knows. But it's and then they asked him about his own sightings. And he talked about how he's had a few sightings he said they were definitely aerial constructs of some kind. And then he gave a little more detail about two that he saw in Martha's Vineyard with a couple of friends of his, two flying side by side that kind of zoomed by. Going very quickly. So really interesting, really cool, because he just went straight into it and started talking about it, and pretty cool.
Yeah. Now, I actually saw somewhere online a picture of you interviewing him at one time.
Yeah, I did. Yep. Locally, he came here. He's got a vodka called Crystal Skull Vodka that is based off of the Crystal Skulls, you know, the legend of those skulls and everything. So we were able to get in there as press and do a short interview with him. And he was really excited to talk about it at the time. Bud Hopkins had just passed away. He was aware of that. And he mentioned how sad he was about Bud Hopkins. Just to show you, he stays up to date on, like, the day-by-day news when it comes to UFOs. Pretty cool.
Yeah, you know, his neighbor actually listens to the show, to my show. And
really?
Yep, and he actually put an envelope, gave an envelope to his assistant trying to get him on my show from you, which was very nice.
That is so very nice. That's awesome.
But, of course, he's not been on the show. So it didn't work.
Yeah. Well, good luck. Yeah, we've tried to get him at the conference, and his publicist just wants too much money for us to afford. But hopefully one day, you know, he'll kind of come in. And, you know, with MUFON, when I was a director with MUFON, I never got the chance to do this. But he has dinner with the board once in a while because he really likes MUFON.
Wow.
Yeah, really cool. They had a standing kind of yearly thing, I know, for a period of time.
Wow. Yeah, the day I get Dan Aykroyd on is probably going to be my last show. I'll probably
say,
well, you can't get better than this. And
do the whole Costanza and leave on the high note. All right, I'm out of here.
Well, I better not say that because my supporters and listeners will just plain go away if they ever hear he's going to be on the show. So I take that back. I take that back. Anyway, so what else is happening?
Well, another celebrity, and this is kind of like our big UFO alien celebrity, talked about UFOs this week, and that is the beloved Giorgio Tsoukalos. So, of course, he's famous, and what was funny is this: he did a Reddit AMA, where you ask me anything kind of thing, where people can chat with him and ask him questions, and this website called What's Culture did kind of the top 10, what they felt was pieces of information that came out of that whole thing. And it's funny because they talk about how nobody knows this guy's name. All they know is his photo and the alien stuff because he's so super famous with his photo, with his hair standing up and everything. Hmm. In particular, the one that says, I'm not saying it was aliens, but it was aliens.
But it was aliens, yeah.
All of these memes, I've got tons of them in this story because it was just too fun. But one of the things they asked him about was if he had his own UFO sighting. And what's interesting, I think, is that he only just recently had it at the Last Contact in the Desert conference in 2014. He said he was with 26 other people, that they were out there doing a night sky watch with some night vision goggles, and at about midnight, they saw what they thought were stars inside the Big Dipper, which he said didn't believe there, and after a while, they began to move off into space or something. So that's how he described it. So kind of cool that it's just recent, and he'll be at Contact in the Desert again this year, and so will I. I'll be talking out there.
Oh, my
so
goodness.
Maybe I'll see a UFO with him.
How about that?
Yeah, so kind of neat, but otherwise it was kind of funny because, of course, they asked him about the hair and why he did it, and he's like, I don't know. It just happened, and I've heard another story, I think, from him. I can't remember where I heard it, but he just kind of said he had a bad hair day. He decided to go with some crazy hair, and people loved it, so he stuck with it. But
he didn't say it was aliens?
No, he did. Okay. He said, my hair was abducted by aliens. And then he went on to give the other answer that it just happened.
And what else is going on?
A couple of sightings to debunk. Sorry, guys. Okay. But there have been a couple of sightings out there. And, you know, I love sightings when you can't debunk them. That's the most fun, of course. That's the most interesting and what inspires me to stay in this field. But there are some bigger sightings, and it seems like we know what's going on here. There was a UFO video that's been circling quite a bit of a UFO near this Chile volcanic eruption.
Yeah.
Yeah, Jason wrote this story, my colleague Jason McClellan, and he did a great job because he went through all of the news, and he was able to find this news where there's a pilot who is flying around there, and he did some filming real close to the plumes, and he's like, well, that was me. That wasn't a UFO. So he put that up there. There were also helicopters flying around in the area, and there's video from those helicopters out on the internet. So it looks like it was this aircraft. Now, Lee Spiegel wrote about this, and he interviewed Mark D'Antonio, and Mark feels that it's a drone. He doesn't think it is a plane. So I talked to Mark about that, and we had some back and forth, and Mark says he thinks that perhaps it wasn't the pilot, that the pilot was probably up there, but that he doesn't think it looks like a plane, so it could have been a drone. Now, nobody said they were flying drones around it. There's no evidence that there was, although that's entirely possible because people are filming everything with drones these days. So it was most likely one of those explanations.
Yeah, but what would Giorgio say?
It was aliens.
Aliens.
Yep. Aliens.
And the last story is also...
The last story, UFOs buzz the Bronx. No, this was not a hoax whatsoever, actually.
Oh, okay.
It's very interesting, and this is a most likely case. So it seems like when you read their story throughout the day in the Bronx, in particular an area called Hunts Point, there were some reports coming in that there was some UFO activity. So people are reporting UFOs. This is kind of cool, though, because the website Inquisitor had found this somehow. A New York Times reporter, I guess, looked into it, and I don't think they wrote a story about it, but he tweeted that he called the police and to ask them, hey, I heard you're getting a lot of UFO reports, and they said, don't ask us about it or we're going to hang up on you. He said, called NYPD. They said, if I asked about it, you'll hear a dial tone, quote unquote, on the last section. So funny, he then tweeted later, pro tip, the NYPD Public Affairs Office really does not like it when you call on a Saturday night to ask about UFOs in the Bronx. So he was not treated well. The New York Post, however, has written a couple stories of it. Now, they're kind of a new they kind of do like a lot of the news sites do, where they're really tongue in cheek. They're almost like a if you have a Village Voice type of thing. The New Times is what we have out here, where they're jokey in their stories. They're really silly, so they do a lot of that kind of thing in their stories. But they did interview some witnesses. One of those witnesses said he saw these two things streaking across the sky. He put his phone out the window of his car because he was driving and snapped like crazy, and he thinks he got a picture of a UFO. It looks like the picture is actually lens flare because he's taking a picture directly into the sun. So I don't think he actually captured what he saw streaking across the sky. But people saw streaks all throughout the night, but they asked MUFON New York what they thought about it, and MUFON said, I think it's the Lyrids meteor shower. And they're probably right, just because these were all little lights streaking across the sky. Every person kind of described it similarly. So, and actually on Sunday night, there was in Northern Ireland, one of these things was videotaped. And I've got that in the story where you see kind of this massive meteorite light up. Pretty cool. And that was a big story out in Ireland. They also interviewed for this story Ryan Sprague. And guess what he said it was?
An alien?
He did Giorgio proud. He said it was. No, he said that it could be many different things. It could even be a plane because this is near LaGuardia Airport. But he said just because it's near the airport, you know, we can't disregard all UFO sightings because some of them could be aliens. But kind of cool. Ryan got interviewed in there, and I guess it was in the print article because I think I saw him post on Facebook, and I posted his picture, his headshot, from his website, where he's looking very dashing. So that's in the story as well. So these are some big stories you're going to hear about. Seems like there's explanations for these sightings. However, as Martin and I know, there are plenty of sightings out there for which there are no easy answers.
Yeah. We'll see you next week, Alejandro.
All right. Thank you so much for having me on again, and we'll talk to you next week.
So hang in there, everyone. We'll be right back with Story Musgrave right after this quick music break. Okay, that tune was by Kerry Lloyd Whitehouse. And if you're listening live, you can jump over to our chat room at podcastufo.com. And it is not Story Musgrave coming up. We just spoke with him. That was pre-recorded news. And who is on the other end is Peter Slattery. How you doing, Peter?
Good, Martin. How you going?
Very good. And you're somehow doing time travel. You're in tomorrow. It's a we're here on Wednesday, and you're Thursday morning or something, right?
Yeah, 10:50 a.m. on Thursday, and yeah, you're Wednesday there, so yeah, you're talking to the future.
Yeah. Yeah, thank you for joining us, and you know, you were really kind to come on like last minute. I found out that Story Musgrave is a very, very busy guy, and he didn't realize that he was booked for 2 hours, and I feel like I was lucky enough to get as much time as I did with him. So I really want to thank you for being able to just say yes so quickly, and welcome back. You were on, I think, about 2 years ago, a year and a half ago, right?
Yeah, it was a while. I can't remember when, but it was a while ago, yeah.
Yeah. And you have, if you would just refresh the audience, a lot of people are new listeners and they don't know your background. If you could just kind of give your background, if you would, and how you got interested in the subject of UFOs.
All right. As you can hear, I've got the Australian accent, so I'm from down under. I grew up in Albury, which is situated, or Albury-Wodonga. The Albury side is New South Wales. It's the twin city, Albury-Wodonga. It's the New South Wales side next to Victoria, sort of about 3.5 hours northeast of Melbourne, which is where I'm actually living now, but Albury is where I was born. Went through school, had cleaning jobs and stuff like that once I left school, but I was pursuing a music career. I eventually bought out 14 albums, and then sort of everything went crazy once I moved up to Queensland and came back to Albury. Basically, I just didn't want to continue on in the music arena, and just there was a shift in just my circumstances and everything. And when I moved back to Albury, I started to have sightings of strange aerial phenomena, which I did have when I was younger, and I had some interactions with some weird, what I would call beings. I didn't see them as aliens. I didn't see them as demons or angels. I didn't know what the hell I was experiencing. But then everything started up in 2010, as I just said, and before I knew it, it went on the news here in Australia, primetime news. I thought it was just going to be shown in the local area because I was just wondering what the hell I was seeing. And lo and behold, I get contacted by actually somebody that was in the military who actually left the military a few years beforehand, telling me that he'd seen me on the news up at, I think it was Coffs Harbour. That's when I realised that this went around the country. And the sightings didn't stop, and the, you know, I started to experience other weird things besides shadow beings and weird, what people would call the greys, but it wasn't, these things were more about actually white colour. And things just picked up, and today they continue. I actually take people out sky watching now. I've just filmed a craft the other day, which I'm about to put up soon, next to the sun for 10 minutes with witnesses in my backyard here in the city where 2.5 million people live. And I've actually just moved here September last year to be with my partner, who's a psychic medium and also an ET communicator, she calls herself, in terms of she speaks star language. She's also been on television and done different things here. But since I've moved to the city, I've actually started filming more objects with witnesses. Some people, I've had pilots with me. And I thought the activity was going to actually calm down, but it's quite picked up, which I'm surprised of. And a lot of things can be seen at petermaxwellslattery.com. Lots there for people to see, but that's sort of just a quick over, you know, thumbnail sketch of who I am and what's going on.
Yes. By the way, that website is right in our show notes. You can find that and click right on that. And there's other information also in the show notes, of the news we just went over and all that. So one of the things I remembered the last conversation, didn't you say your brother had an, you know, when you were younger, wasn't it your brother or a friend or something that you had like a major encounter?
Or there was one. Well, my brother's had encounters himself, and it was pretty funny because not until a couple of years ago did he say anything. And this was after I went public and everything, which I thought was a bit stupid looking back now, but you do what you do. But I'm not too worried now. But what happened was in 2010, I had a friend with me for four of the sightings. There were six sightings. He ended up having one himself. Now, he's blurred out in my second last documentary Confirmation, but it was funny because we still we contact each other today and stay in touch, and he's actually had a major sighting probably about a year ago, and he's skeptical, but and I like skeptics because he himself can't explain what he's seen with me and what he's seen in the last year. But I like skeptics because they look at both sides of the argument and the evidence and they weigh their conclusions on it. Now, he's not saying these are aliens or whatever people want to call it, but he's saying this is not a frigging satellite, it's not a plane, it's not a helicopter. He doesn't know what it was. And there's not too much military activity around Albury. You'd be looking at 3 hours at least, or 2 to 3 hours, because there is a army base there. But what they do is the tanks that come back from Afghanistan and Iraq, they sort of bring them, they strip them, redo the electronics, and send it back out. There's no, you know, air force. There's no nothing like that. So, yeah, one of my friends had witnessed a lot of this stuff with me. Today I've got over 100 witnesses to a lot of phenomena around me, and a lot of these you can hear them in the videos. There's some witness testimony in the documentaries as well. So, you know, people have seen some of this stuff with me, and, yeah, you know, I've got it running in the family. My dad, who's a cop for 38 years, or was a cop, he was a senior sergeant, retired now, he started witnessing things with me before I left Albury as well, and he just threw his hands up not knowing what he was seeing either, because I said to him, you know, I hope he sees it one day, and he ended up seeing something that took him aback, and there was high-flying jets in the air at the time that were I estimate they usually fly around 33,000 feet above Albury if they're going from Melbourne to Sydney or to Canberra, and these objects were, you know, basically blinking in and out doing different things, and they were lower than the jet as well, which... my brother was there with me, so it was sort of a family event, which was good.
And before that, what did he think about your sightings? Did he believe what you were saying, or was this kind of a wake-up for him?
Well, I'll tell you something, and I don't know if you've had Mary Rodwell on the show. She's very well-known worldwide. She's won EBE awards with her documentaries, and she's a hypnotherapist, was mates with Dolores Cannon, and she's had over, I think it's 2,000 or 3,000 clients now, and I actually did a documentary for her recently, and this is what ties in with what my dad said, is what Mary says is the best documentation or evidence you can have for how people have really had an experience or not is how they changed their life. Now, I've been very vocal in who I am and my rap career. Yes, I used to smoke a bit of this and drink a bit of that and whatever. Now, I had a doctor recently ask me, when did your experiences start? And I said, 8. And he goes, well, it can't be drug induced. And I said, well, friggin' oath, unless I was doing this stuff at 8. No way, you know, because this is when stuff started. But my father, he proofread my first 3 or 4 books. I've got 7 books out now. And I talked to him about this. He basically tried to investigate me as if he was doing a report for the police, you know. Mm-hmm. He looked at everything. He tried to trick question me. He tried to ask me things the same way but, you know, with different wording to see if I would do whatever. And, you know, he came to the conclusion later on that, you know, something's happened to me. Whether or not it's real, it's been real to me. And I could produce some evidence. And then when he saw something with me, he believes something's going on and that I'm seeing something. Now, I actually predicted when this was going to happen when we went outside, and I was telling him that this was going to happen. Now, this isn't summoning or anything, but I got a voice in my head telling me that something was going to happen, or the more of a what I call thought transfer. Some people would call it telepathy, but I would rather call it thought transfer from my understanding. And from that point on, and with what else I've produced and other people have told him they've seen with me lately, he's inclined to still think something's going on, and now he's had a bit of a taste of it. He's, you know, been taken aback by it. But what exactly still, like a lot of people, they need to have the full-blown experience themselves or they're just not going to get it, or else you and I wouldn't be speaking and you wouldn't be doing the shows.
That's right.
And others wouldn't be doing it. And, you know, this is sort of the predicament we're in, but people think this is nuts and bolts, and a very small, minute part of this is nuts and bolts. A lot of this is, you know, I've had experiences lately where I'm starting to think a large majority of my experiences are projected or third-eye experiences that seem as real as this computer screen in front of me and the microphone now. But then again, the camera is capturing some of this stuff, and then you've got some of these experiences where some people will see the crafts and some people won't, and yet you can show them the video going, here's the craft, and they're like, why couldn't I see it at the time? So these are things where I'm questioning, even though I've got a communication, a dialogue going on with these things, which are far beyond even extraterrestrial, it goes beyond that. And I'm starting to think now that there's one dimension with different vibrations in it, rather than all these different dimensions that people talk about, and there's these interplanes in between the vibrations. But I can't prove this. This is what my reality is, and it is what it is. But what can you do with a lot of this? You know, there's a lot of people been investigating this for years. They haven't seen anything. You know, I myself, if I take people out to do the Skywatchers, we're using satellite trackers. I use SatTrack's one of the most comprehensive ones. You're still going to have a few things, but I'm not looking for satellites. I'm looking for stuff that's coming down low, that's changing direction. I'm looking for what the skeptics are looking for, because I want to show people some crazy stuff. And there's a few videos up that you can see for yourself, or in the latest documentary, the revealing that I've done. You can see people's responses, and you can see some of the footage for yourself. But it's an ever-changing thing, and I think we've got to admit that we don't know everything. I myself even experienced it interacting with what I'm interacting with. I still haven't got a clue what's going on, and this is where I think people need to accept they don't know what they don't know. You've got to take preconceived ideas and preconceived notion out of the mix. Mm-hmm. You know, if you don't, you're a debunker either way. You're trying to debunk those that are trying to say you're full of crap, or you're debunking those that are saying, you know, this is real. So you've got to have that balance.
I see. I agree with that. So we're right at the top of the hour. We're going to take a quick break. Thank you for filling in for this part of the show.
That's fine.
Okay, that's it for this part of the show. If you haven't subscribed and you want to listen to the second half of the show, just go to podcastufo.com. You'll see the information right on our sidebar, and you can support us for as low as $1 a month or more. And I want to thank everyone for helping out, and thank you for your patience and how we had to switch the show around today. And helping out was Alejandro Rojas with the news, Carrie Lloyd Whitehouse with the music, and Peggy Shunning for managing our Facebook page. And our guests, both guests, that is, we want to thank Story Musgrave and Peter Slattery. So next week, we are going to have a live show around Robin, and it's going to be in Portland, Maine, with some Maine UFO enthusiasts. I'm not sure how many people are going to show up. It should be interesting and a lot of fun. You can check us out right here on the Dark Matter Radio Network each and every Wednesday at 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. This is Martin Willis reminding you to keep your eyes to the sky.